listen to it again. I know, it's another basketball episode of Walking the Field podcast over Zoom. Gerald Hopkins, Alex Crowe, bringing it to you. We have a lot to get through. We have a new segment coming in. The world is in chaos, and so are we because we listen and watch college basketball. So what's new, right? Alex, you already know what we're here to do, and I'm going to start this off real quick. I didn't even ask him how he's doing, and there's a reason, because there's some news we have to talk about real quick, and that is that March Madness this year will all be in the great state of Indiana. Woohoo! Indiana just got the biggest economic boost they could ever imagine, the whole March Madness tournament. I can make a lot of jokes about this, but I will only make one, because I'm actually really happy that we have plans for March Madness and that these plans sound somewhat solid, where you're going to have a bunch of teams basically all in the same area, and it's kind of a bubble, kind of not. I hope this works well, right? Obviously, there's still a lot of things to be figured out, and this is just an opening announcement. I am just waiting for Indiana Construction to make a team late to one of these games, because I've learned one thing about the Midwest, okay? And me and my family usually take a trip to, like, Michigan once a year, once every other year. And there's only one place that we, as a family, get stopped by construction or something just absolutely going wrong, and it's in Indiana. So I'm telling you, I'm warning you now, somebody's going to try to go from Indiana to Purdue and hit roadway construction and find no way out of it, and they're going to be late to a game for the tournament. Outside of that, though, I'm just happy we are having a tournament. I don't really know what to expect from the tournament yet, obviously, and there's still a lot of things they're going to figure out. Do you have anything you want to add to this, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think that Indiana is such a great location. You know, of course, it's a place where basketball has always been such a big deal. You know, huge basketball hotbed. The people in Indiana are really interested in basketball. It's one of the few states where I feel like basketball really takes the front row when compared to football. And it's something that I'm just very interested in seeing. I think Indianapolis has done a great job of hosting the NCAA tournament in the past, and I see no reason why they wouldn't be able to make it work here. They're having multiple locations within Indiana, so not completely limiting travel, but limiting it to where you're not traveling too far, not having to encounter a whole lot of riffraff on the way to the games. So it should be really fun, but I'm really interested. What else should be pretty fun is our new segment, a little buy or sell action.
Yeah, let me get to this, because I'm taking a classic idea here that you probably heard on all radio talk shows once or twice before. Really, this segment feels like it was really good on Pardon the Interruption, right? This is basically our glorified version of Pardon the Interruption. And we're going to be doing it because we're both somewhat interested in finance. That's why you got to listen to the podcast so we can make some money off of it, right? In, you know, buying low or selling high, right? And the idea here is I have about 8-ish statements that I've written down for me and Alex to talk about. If me or Alex liked the statement, we would buy the statement. It's like buying stock in Tesla, because everyone needs to buy stock in Tesla. Or if we think this is a statement that is too bold, something that we don't agree with or think that's going to happen, we are going to sell, right? Like, you're going to sell everything else off because the world's going to end in 3 years. I'm just kidding. I have no clue about that. But, yeah, it's a pretty simple concept. I think it'll make a little bit more sense when I explain it, when we start doing the first one here. And this is my first statement to you, Alex. I want to know if you would buy or sell on this this statement. There will be a sub-500 team in the Big Ten. And when I say sub-500, I mean in total record, not conference record, that will make the NCAA tournament. Are you buying or selling?
I would definitely sell on that idea, because I wasn't sure when you'd first pitched that to me whether it was conference or overall. Conference, I think there's a better chance. But I look at all the teams right now who I feel like would be in danger of maybe not finishing based on conference play and based on how conference has already gone this season. I look at teams like Purdue, Maryland, Penn State, Nebraska, maybe Indiana, although I think that Indiana will probably finish above 500 in total win-loss. I don't think any of those teams were really looking at making it anyway out of the 14 teams. The Big Ten, however, is really strong. You know, you've got 7 teams right now currently ranked in the top 25. You've got 2 more in Ohio State as well as Northwestern who have been ranked at least once this season. So you've got – it's very top-heavy. I think that, you know, it's very possible that you see 9 or 10 teams potentially make the playoffs. But to me, I'm thinking without an inspiring – tournament run in which they are able to somehow knock off, like if they were to knock off Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, or Michigan State, you know, multiple of those teams And you know, they end the regular season strong and then they have a great tournament. I think it's possible, but I just don't think that of the teams that I think that could finish below 500, I'm not sure that any of them I was thinking regardless were going to make the tournament. What about you?
I'm going to actually, just because I believe in the strength of conferences, much buy on this, because I feel like those teams that are close, like in Indiana or Purdue, will benefit from the fact that the Big Ten is just that good. There's also just been a lot of chaos around the Big Ten. Any team that's like close to 500 in their overall record, I could drop at any point and go below or stay right on that level. It's really tight, and I don't know what conference play is going to bring. Every team, and we've seen this, a team like Northwestern, right, comes out really hot in the Big Ten, and now they might just have a chance at a bid. We don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on with the Big Ten just in general. It's one of those few times I don't want to bet against any team almost, except for maybe like Nebraska or Penn State, really not having at least a chance or being real close. The Big Ten feels really, one is really deep. Two, like you said, it's very top heavy. And three, some of the other conferences have been lacking in terms of that. I don't know. This is the best conference right now in basketball, which pains me to say a little bit because I'm a big ACC stan here. But, like, man, the Big Ten is good. And I think I like just even losing to some of these teams, right? Like having a loss to Iowa or Illinois on your like schedule doesn't really hurt. Like, it looks better than if you're a Pac-12 team and you lose to you know, like anyone that's not like UCLA, USC, Colorado, or Oregon, right? Like, you lose anybody in there, like you lose to Cal, that hurts way more than if you lose to Indiana, even, right? Or, you know, we can't call them Indiana, we're talking college basketball, so we'll go from there. But I'm buying on that. It might be a little bit of a risky buy. I might do a call option on it, but I like that. I like it just because I think the Big Ten is that deep. My second statement here, Alex, this is one I think you thought of, but I'm going to read it anyways. Is Texas back?
I'm putting my entire life savings into this buy after that complete. I mean, Texas in their last game, and this will kind of segue into our real statement, number 2/3, is whether Kansas will be in the Big 12 regular season. Well, if they will be the regular season champion, I think with how well the Big 12 is playing as a whole, I think that they are in for sure. I think that they are the second best conference as far as quality teams. I think you may have a little bit more depth in the ACC. We're going to talk about them later. But the Big 12, you look at Texas, Baylor, Kansas, Texas Tech, West Virginia. And I think all of those teams are really, really good. And then also you've seen teams like Oklahoma really show up to play this year, as well as TCU. And you've got a really nice upper echelon of that conference. And it's a conference that as a whole I'm buying. Texas, I think, might be – I think it's going to be between them and Baylor and not them and Kansas or Baylor and Kansas. And so for that reason, I'm selling on the fact that Kansas will be a Big 12 champion.
I think just for jokes, I have to buy that Texas is back, because why would you not buy on that? Because that's just like – that is buying Tesla. Like, yeah, we were joking about buying Tesla. This is buying Tesla's buying if Texas is back. And they've – like you said, and not only that, they went to Allen Fieldhouse and took care of the Jayhawks. Granted, this is not the Allen Fieldhouse that's, you know, running up the decibel chart, but this is still Allen Fieldhouse, where Texas and a lot of teams in the Big 12, there are teams that have came into the Big 12 and have not won a game at Allen Fieldhouse yet. And Texas came in and won by 30. This is a different team. Shaka Smart grew his hair back, and Texas is back. I love it. And like I said, I think, you know, and like I will agree with you, I'm selling on Kansas not being the Big 12 regular season champion. And not only just because of Baylor and Texas, don't forget about Texas Tech and West Virginia that are really going to be in the mix for this too. I have high hopes on that. I always love how West Virginia plays. They play quick, full court press. You know, West Virginia, tougher than a weekend at your in-laws. Thank you, John Ronstein. I think that's a great quote again. If I quote, I think I'm basically like, quote him one per episode. So met my quota there. And Texas Tech has Matt McClung, and they've always been really solid, right? But there's a lot of top, like we were talking about the Big Ten being top heavy, right? This, I think, is a more top heavy conference, being Texas and Baylor. And Baylor looks good, right? Like, we cannot sleep on the fact that, yeah, Texas came in and did their work, but man, Baylor looks even better, which is crazy. And the Jayhawks, this is not, I want to say a rude awakening, right? But it's a reality check. The Jayhawks didn't bring in anybody that was a 5-star kid this year. They're bringing still deep, good 4-star kids, but this is not, you know, this is not your mom's Kansas. And with all the stuff that's been going on with the NCAA investigations, and they've been kind of in the mud, this is some of the consequences of that. they're still a very good team, right? This is, you know, and this is not the best team we've ever seen from Kansas, and they're still number six in the country and still very good. But this is not what we are used to. This is not the Big 12 dominant Kansas that they once were. And we have to keep that in mind. Speaking of teams that are not dominating their conference like they once were, statement four here. Alex, are you buying or selling that Kentucky will not be in the SEC championship game, assuming there is a tournament? We are going to run on the assumption that the SEC has a tournament like normal. I hope there obviously is one, but if there were to be a tournament, would you buy that Kansas would not be in it, or are you selling and thinking that they would, or not Kansas, Kentucky would be in it or not?
Well, see, now that's an interesting question sitting here in 2021, because if you're asking me late 2020, I'm saying definitely not. I did not like the way that Kentucky was playing at all. I think that, you know, they were, I believe, about one and six. However, since the new year, they've knocked off two SEC foes. Granted, they weren't amazing. Well, one of them, it was Vanderbilt, of course. So that's, we maybe count that as half a win. But the other team was a Mississippi State team that mounted a 14-point second-half comeback and ended up beating Missouri by about 15 just yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe the day before, earlier this week here as we sit here recording on Wednesday, January 6th. I think that Mississippi State's pretty good, and I think that Kentucky's win over them looks that much better. They're currently sitting half a game back from Alabama, both those teams, the only two undefeated teams in the SEC, and I think the SEC is going to end up being a lot how we typically see the Big Ten, where, you know, whoever wins the Big Ten tournament, it's who is hot at that time. You know, early in the season, we saw a team like Rutgers be really hot. In the middle of the season, we saw Northwestern get hot. They've cooled off a little bit. Rutgers cooled off a little bit. They got beat by nearly 25 points last night by the Michigan State Spartans. And with the SEC, it's really who is able to sustain their momentum. Alabama starting to get their stride a little bit. And that's kind of the other thing that we were asking was whether, you know, is Alabama really the best team in the SEC right now? I think it's a definite maybe. I may be buying that. With Kentucky, I'm going to sell, and I'm only going to sell because I just think that they are too young when compared to everyone else. Their offense, while it is trending upward in SEC play, they've surpassed the 70-point mark for the first two times this season, not counting their opening game versus Morehead State and their two SEC tilts. They're currently 2-0, but their three-point shooting has been really, really bad. It's been 12th. In the SEC, they're coming in shooting at about 30%. That clip needs to be higher for them. They still play a very old school type of ball that's very, it's not perimeter heavy, whereas where you see with like, you know, Alabama and Nate Oates' team at Alabama, you see them playing a much more analytic heavy ball game. So I'm not sure. I think that Kentucky will end up, I want to say that they make the NCAA tournament, actually, but I look at who they could run into. I think if they run into a veteran Tennessee team, you know, a veteran Alabama team, a veteran Mizzou team, I think that teams that are really good on defense, I think have the potential to kind of drag Kentucky through the mud. Because Kentucky, again, their offense is doing better, but it's not near the level that it normally is. And so, as much as I would like to buy and hope that they continue their momentum that they've kind of brought into the new year, I really just don't see them being to knock off all of Alabama, Florida, even a Mississippi State team if they have to play them again. You know, Mississippi State is a quality team. I believe they're actually leading the conference in three-point shooting at nearly 39%. So I just think that the SEC is really sneaky good. I think that everyone in the SEC is really close to each other. I don't think that they're rated as highly as the Big Ten, but I think that the amount of space between each team, I think, is very similar to the Big Ten, with the Big Ten just being at an elevated playing field.
I am going to sell on this, and not just because I think Kentucky's been, you know, the inconsistent young team that we have obviously in the whole world's kind of plagued them for being. I have dark hope in Florida if they get that Keontae Johnson. Granted, I hope Keontae Johnson does not rush his recovery, and I hope that if he can play that he will, but also they does it safely. But the Gators have weirdly somehow turned into a dark horse team in the SEC, right? This team always has talent, and it feels weird to ever count Florida out at anything in the SEC, except if you counted the cheating allegations, because you put that down too. You know, they have some talent here. They also took care of Alabama, the team that has been pretty hot. At one point, so or that could have been a little later, but no, never mind. Other way around, Alabama took care of Florida, but there's too much going on here for me to be like, yeah, let me go on them. And I think that Florida's not playing one of their better players right now, and they still look okay. But I like that statement five of, is Alabama the best team in the SEC? I'm going to go on a limb and buy it. Not even because I want to buy it, and I think it's actually true. It's because sometimes you make bad investment choices. And I like investing in who's hot. The guy I want to see do it a little bit more, he's been starting out really hot, is Javon Quinterly. He's a transfer from Villanova. He's a sophomore guard. At Villanova, he came in as one of these really high-ranked guys, and rightfully so. He's a hooper, and he's shown it a bit at Alabama. But at Villanova, you're not expected to start as a freshman. It's very much more beat you down, come in slow. You're going to learn a system. And that's not a bad thing. That's why Villanova has been constantly successful, and that's why the guys they bring into the league are very solid professional players. There's no slight here from me on Villanova's stance on how they run their program at all. But at Alabama, Javon Quinn has got a chance to be the isolation guard that he came out of high school being. This guy was once, if I remember, part of Jelly Fam. He's very, like, he's very fun to watch, and that's how he plays the game. He's flashy. He's fun. If he keeps it up, man, Alabama's fun, and Alabama's not just a fun team. They have guys who can score. The SEC has been very good at this year at locking you down and putting you into 60-point games. And you know what? Having a team that drops 80 and says, we're doing this and you're going to live with it because we could just go past your best defender, it's like a welcome change. And if I were to have to put my whole life on it, I wouldn't buy that Alabama would actually be the one team that ends the best in the SEC. But because I have no actual stake outside of my very flimsy reputation, let me buy. Let me get more of it. Give me some more. Like, this is going to be a fun team to watch. I really like their guard play. Give me a chance on it. I like having risk in my portfolio. Alabama will be my risk in my portfolio.
And I think it's really that – I really think it's that Alabama's the best team in the SEC today. I think they're the best team right now. Will they be the best team at the end of the season? I'm not sure, but – much like Kentucky, their offense is trending up. They're shooting about 9 points higher, 9% higher from three-point range than they were in their non-conference. They're up to now 32%. They're shooting 39% from three in conference. To me, Alabama's biggest thing, if they want to sustain being the team to beat in the Southeastern Conference, I think it really depends on John Petty. He's really starting to come on, a senior. He was a leader last year and has taken a little bit of a backseat in the scoring this year. Some guys like Quinterly have been stepping up, but I think that Petty is a guy who really needs to continue to make an impact for the Crimson Tide. But right now, I think that they are the team. I'm buying that they are the team right now to beat in the SEC.
And like I said, we like some risk in our portfolio. That's why we're buying Alabama. We're buying while they're up. It's usually a bad idea to buy a stock when it's at its peak, but hey, we're doing it anyways. Statement six, even though I was about to say it here, there will be 9 teams from the ACC that make March Madness or make the tournament. Alex, are you buying or selling that?
Now, I went back and forth on this one a lot, and I'm going to say I'm going to be selling. I think they're one. That's one team too many. I think that it's very possible that 9 teams make it, but I think it's more realistic. I think that 8 teams could make it because I look at the ACC top to bottom, all right, and teams I think, barring a complete collapse, much like Missouri had last night against Mississippi State, I think that Virginia Tech makes it. I think that Louisville probably makes it as well. Virginia, I don't like them, but I think, you know, they are just a tournament team. They're good on defense. They're going to get some upsets. I think that they make it as well. Florida State and Clemson, I think, also round out, you know, in my opinion, teams that I think should be locks in the ACC. And then I look at teams that I think they are not getting in. You know, I look at Miami, Boston College, Notre Dame, and I'll go ahead and throw Wake Forest in there. The first quality opponent they played, they got blasted. So they're 3-1, but I think it's kind of an artificial 3-1. And then you can make lots of arguments for other teams. The other teams, I guess, that, you know, so that's 5 teams that I think will make it for sure. And so then you need 4 more out of these next, I believe, 6 teams. And those teams are Syracuse, Duke, NC State, Georgia Tech, North Carolina, and Pitt. Out of those teams, I want to say that North Carolina probably has the best losses, you could say. I don't think anyone's going to super fault North Carolina for losing to Texas, Iowa, NC State, and Georgia Tech. Those aren't horrible losses. I would like to see them beat Notre Dame and Miami by more than a combined 3 points. So that makes me a little bit nervous. But, you know, North Carolina right now, they just don't have a whole lot of quality wins. They have an opportunity to get some. They've got Clemson and Florida State coming up most notably in their next couple of games, and that could really shift it in their favor. Duke, I've really not been impressed with this year. I think that in the games that they should have blown people out, they at minimum won. They've beaten Coppin State, Bellarmine, a brand new team to Division One, and then Notre Dame, who's currently sitting in the basement of the ACC. And then they've lost. They lost a decently close game early in the season to Michigan State, and then they were beaten pretty handily by Illinois. That game was never in too much of a question. So, you know, am I fully buying the fact that Duke is going to be a lock in the tournament? No, I'm at this point in time, I'm not. Kind of the same thing with Syracuse. They've beaten a lot of teams that they should have beaten, but they've also had, you know, some reasonably close games. They played a game against a Buffalo team, scored 107, but gave up 96. I just think that they have questions. Their offense looks really good, though, so I think I buy Syracuse more currently than I would some other teams. Another team that I like and I think will make the tournament is North Carolina State. I think that they are a team that really just doesn't have a whole lot. They don't have any bad losses. They've lost to St. Louis, who is now ranked, and they've also lost to Clemson. And that game against Clemson, their most recent game out, was a four, you know, it was by 4 points and in overtime. Then I look at Pittsburgh. I put them in this category as well, more of just saying that they're 5-2 right now. And they're 1-1 in the ACC. I just don't see them really going too far in the tournament if they make it. So I'm not sure. Same thing with Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech has a nice win over Kentucky. They've got a win over UNC. So I like them more than a couple of teams. They played Florida State reasonably close. They had an opportunity to potentially pick up another non-conference win, but their game against Louisville, unfortunately, was postponed. Something to note that Pittsburgh and Georgia Tech play each other in their next games. Again, Wake Forest, I'm not really too high on or anything like that. So it's like, of those teams, do I think that of Syracuse, Duke, NC State, Georgia Tech, UNC, and Pitt, do I think that half of those teams, that over half of those teams are going to make it? I don't. I think that they're unfortunately going to beat up on each other. I think the only way that they could get nine teams is if like one of the bottom third of teams is able to win, you know, if like, for example, if Georgia Tech were to sweep Pittsburgh and sweep NC State and sweep Syracuse. If one team was able to beat the other two teams below them, you know, for the 4 out of 6, it's possible. But I think that 8 is a more realistic target for the ACC.
I'm buying 9, and here are my 9. In no particular order. I want that to be known. I just wrote these down. I think Duke will make it. Granted, me and you differ on that a little. I just think that, Duke is kind of young and dumb, but they don't have as many young and dumb losses as Kentucky's had. Granted, part of that's been because they haven't played as many games, but that's also weirdly, if you're going to tell me the ACC is now turning into the conference that's not playing enough games, whoa, somebody called Dabo Sweeney.
Right.
Second, I have Virginia and Virginia Tech. The whole state's getting in. Clemson, I've been high on Clemson, right? I think Florida State is going to be a good enough team to make it in there, so that's 5. North Carolina, I have in. And the reason I do, and I watched them yesterday against Miami, and I thought, this is really the game for me that determines if they are a good enough team or not. And I mean this because talent-wise, they're all right. They're not. This is not the 5-star super talent, you know, Kobe White, all those guys that they used to have, like the Hansbro brothers. This is not like the super North Carolina teams, but they have some talent. They have Garrison Brooks. Like, there's some people there that can hoop. But this was a very undermanned and beat up Miami team, and they were playing their butts off. And for most of the game, Miami had the lead. But at the end of the game, North Carolina pulled it out. And now they're 7-4 and they're 2-2 in conference, right? But I'm like, if they don't win that game, it kind of shows you where I thought that would have been a great marker of like, the team's not ready for enough yet. They're not, if you're going to be a good team, right, you need to pull out those games where you're just better than your opponent. UNC had more talent and really more depth, right? This is a banged up Miami team. This is a banged up Miami team. This is a team that almost everybody in the ACC should be giving a really good matchup, if not beating Miami. And that's not because I think they're bad at all. I think they're really good, and they played their hearts out. But, like, man, because North Carolina pulled that one out, I'm like, okay, there's something here. And they're going to go through they're going to go through and beat each other up. But they're going to have to they got a win there that impressed me enough. I think NC State as well pops in. And it's hard for me to ever rule out Syracuse, just ever, because I hate betting against Jim Boeheim. That's just a bad idea in my mind. And he's one of those guys like Tom Izzo that even if they're kind of going up and down in the regular season, you get him into the tournament, there's been plenty of Syracuse runs where people are like, this is a good team, not great. And then they end up in like the Elite Eight. And everyone's like, well, it's Syracuse. I think the same applies this year. That's one of those guys. The 2-3 zone is one of the simplest concepts in basketball that has been ran so perfectly for like 30-plus years by Boeheim. Never bet against them. Hard for me to do. And number 9, Louisville. Louisville is going to have good schedule wins, the biggest one being Kentucky, even though Kentucky's not the same, right? But if Kentucky heats up at all, that win's going to look real good. It's hard for me to bet against a 7-1 team. Those are the 9 I have in, and it's tight. Obviously, I think, like, you look if Duke starts falling off again, if it Matthew Hurt or DJ Stewart don't play up to their potential, they get slapped around a bit. There's a valid argument because they haven't really beat anybody to not put them in the tournament. There's a valid argument, right? Virginia hasn't looked that great. They're 5-2, but it's 5 of their wins. They're 2 losses, one of them being like Gonzaga, didn't look great. This is a weird ACC year because your normal powers don't look as powerful, right? Clemson's one of those teams that looks really good, or Virginia Tech that looks really good, but you're not used to that, and that's okay. That's what makes, I think, the ACC interesting. I think the powers have the talent hasn't developed and worked well together. It's hard for me to bet against talent, and especially some of the best coaches in the NCAA. I will buy the 9 teams. It's a risky 9 team, but I like risk in my portfolio.
Yeah, see, really the only one that I disagree with you, I think more again, you know, I'm not sold. I'm not saying that I think Duke is bad. I just haven't seen Duke beat a team that's not terrible, right? They beat like Coppin State, congratulations. Bellarmine, again, brand new team, and they beat Notre Dame. But the team that I most disagree with you is North Carolina. I think that North Carolina, from a talent standpoint, is not that good, especially at guard play. Their guard play this year has been terrible. Their shooting has been even worse. And they should not – see, because, like, I also was not – I didn't watch it because I was watching the Michigan State game, but I was following the Miami game last night against North Carolina. And for that same reason that you were like, oh, I'm starting to buy into them now because I saw them beat Miami. Miami's 0-4 in conference and 4-5 overall. It should not be that game should not be a dogfight for a tournament team. You know, I mean, I get it. It was at Miami, but I think that North Carolina has got to play better than that because their 3-point shooting has been terrible. Their guard play, you know, they've just missed on the guards that they've had this year. They don't even have like Cole Anthony to fall back on. Their 3 leading scorers are all big men that cannot shoot, being Armando Bacot, Garrison Brooks, and De'Ron Sharp. Caleb Love has been okay, but they also turn the ball over 16 times per game. That's the reason why, like, North Carolina, I feel like that's the one team. You know, I said 8, and I think that we largely agreed on most of them. Virginia Tech, Louisville, Virginia, Florida State, Clemson, Syracuse, probably Duke, and then I wasn't sure about, you know, and then NC State I like as well. But out of Georgia Tech, UNC, and Pittsburgh, I think the team I might like best is Georgia Tech. I think Georgia Tech's already had some quality wins. I think they're going to be a little bit more of a veteran team. And I look at North Carolina, they're shooting below 70% from the line. They're barely shooting over 40% from the field and shooting 30% from 3, averaging 16 turnovers a game. I don't see how a team like that is able to win enough games in the ACC to justify. I think that if they end the ACC with a winning record, they have a chance of getting in. But I'm not sure that they can end the ACC with a winning record. I'm not sure how they beat teams like Duke. I'm not sure how they beat a Virginia, a Clemson. I'm not sure where the offense comes from, because it's not coming from their guard play. You know, their guards are averaging, looks like, 9 points, 8 points. You know, you've even got some veteran guys like Leaky Black only averaging 7 points a game. I don't see how that's getting it done. You know, they're averaging more turnovers than assists. So North Carolina, I'm not very high on whatsoever, just because I don't, you know, I've always thought that Garrison Brooks even was a little bit overrated. I mean, he's a guy who's been at North Carolina now his whole career. A lot of guys in North Carolina that are really good leave, and he hasn't, right? So that's my only thing, as I'm not big on UNC. But it'll be interesting. The ACC is always interesting because it's a lot of rivalry stuff, a lot of rivalry games, and teams typically show up to play. It's like even in like football and stuff, when Texas is not good, they always play Oklahoma well. I think you see a lot of that in the ACC with these teams. You're like, I imagine that even though we're not sure whether Duke or UNC is good, I guarantee you that that's going to be a good game. You know, it always is, right? So it'll be definitely be interesting. I'm still sticking with my sell for the 9 teams. Again, I think that it's possible that 8 teams could get in there, but I just think 9, I just go back and forth. I'm not sure that out of Georgia Tech, UNC, and Pitt, I'm not sure they'll be able to amass enough conference wins in order to justify a nine
Yeah,
spot.
no, this is, I said I like risk my portfolio. I guess you're going a little safer here. A little statement, 6.5. This isn't much of a statement. This is more of a discussion here. Who is our pick for the best team in the ACC? Right now, the best team in the ACC is Virginia Tech, and they're showing that. Overall, good question. I have no clue. Part of it's just because these teams have not really played as often. Like a perfect example, we're talking a lot about Duke. Okay, Duke has not looked great. Duke also is now going to play a game against Boston College without Coach K on the floor, and they haven't played for about a month, right? And if they come out and they play really well against Boston College, well, oh wow, this team looks great. Well, if they come out sluggish and win by two, how do you interpret that, right? Part of this is the ACC also has a lot of just this year and the pandemic thrown into it. I think even more than other conferences, right? Like, yes, everyone's had games canceled and stuff like that, but this has been, they're getting hit pretty hard by not having as many games, or games are kind of weird. A team like Miami being absolutely ravaged in injury and pain, and stuff like that. Duke not playing for a month. Like, if there's any team, any conference that's seen the most amount of damage from the pandemic, it's absolutely been the ACC. So that makes it really hard for me to pick anybody, because it's like it feels like I've barely seen anybody. And like you said, I really love that point of these are a bunch of rivalry games. There are a lot of games this year, and when we talk about them, whenever we get to them, right? I'll use the simple line: throw out the scouting report, throw out the notes. These guys are going to go at it, and it's going to be a close game, no matter how good or bad each other team is on paper. Like the Duke UNCs, like a Syracuse Duke. Syracuse Duke is a weird, not like a storied rivalry, but that's two great coaches that you just kind of go, okay, whatever, right? Like, there's so many games that have that momentum and juice and flair to them, that you don't really know what to do. You just kind of throw it all on the table. Like if you want to go old Big East, Louisville Syracuse, that's a game you don't put anything on. I don't care who's playing it. You could throw Rick Pitino back into Louisville, and I'll say, you know what? They still might not win. They might not lose. It's gonna be a good game, right? There is so much with that, with the conference, that I just don't feel like I know enough about yet. And it's going to be really hard to predict in the future. But right now, the best team in the ACC is Virginia Tech. Not just because they have the numbers, but they are a good defensive squad. They're working well together. They look cohesive. And that's honestly, I think, one of the most important things you need to win in this, just at all, in any aspect, especially this year. Alex, do you have any picks, or are you just kind of guessing like me?
Yeah, I agree. I think that, as we sit right now, obviously one can look at the standings and see Virginia Tech at the top at 2-0 at 8 and, 8-1, with already a conference win over Clemson, the 19th ranked Clemson Tigers, who are also very good. And so I think that right now they're probably the best team, but don't be surprised if Syracuse ends up finishing very high, if not winning the ACC. Because in a year where a lot of teams are struggling to shoot the three, most notably Duke, North Carolina, Clemson's not an incredible three. I mean, they're a pretty solid 3-point shooting team. Florida State's not shooting the three incredibly well. Don't be surprised that a 2-3 zone team, like Syracuse, that plays as well as they do. They're a very senior late. They've got a lot of upperclassmen leading them. They can really score some points. And in a league where I feel like a lot of it has been, more grinded out type of games. I look at a team like Syracuse a lot like Alabama. Not that they play quite as fast or as analytical, but they're a team that I think can really fill it up. They've scored over 100 multiple times this season. And so don't count out the Orange. You'll see if they're able to really make a return. It wouldn't surprise me if they continue to win, that they'll find their way into the rankings maybe next week. But I really like Syracuse, and that may be me picking with my heart. I've always enjoyed watching Syracuse play, just the way that they play. I think they play the game pretty well. I like the way they play it. So I think that Virginia Tech probably right now is, but don't be surprised. Louisville, I just have recency bias, because in the one game that they played that I watched versus Wisconsin, they got beat by nearly 40 points. So that's also probably, that bias is probably hurting my perception of Louisville a little bit, because again, that's the only game I've actually physically watched them play. But I like Virginia Tech and Syracuse right now in the ACC.
Man, the ACC just being weird, and I don't even know where to start. Man, just add Coastal Carolina to the ACC. I want some mullets in there at least. Statement seven. We got two more to go here for our seventh statement. The SEC will have more teams in the March Madness tournament than the Pac-12. Alex, are you buying or selling?
I'm definitely buying. I, you know me, resident Pac-12 hater. I look and I kind of broke it down, and I'm looking at everyone in the Pac-12 right now, and the teams that I wrote down that I think have a pretty solid chance, I'm pretty confident that they can make the tournament. I look at teams at the top. I look at Oregon. I look at UCLA. I look at Colorado. Colorado struggled a little bit out of the gate in conference, currently sitting at 1-2, 7-3 overall. I like Colorado though. I really like McKinley Wright the fourth as a player. I think he's really good, and so I put a little faith in them. I think it's also possible that we could see like a Stanford sneak in. They're currently 6-3, 2-1 in conference. Arizona, I know that they are still under investigation. I'm not sure if they have been banned or if they're going to be banned. I think that if they are ruled eligible, if their appeal basically comes up and they're ruled eligible, I think that they can make it. They're currently 9-1, 3-1 in conference. But then I look at the SEC, and while I'm not sure who in the SEC is going to make it, I think that just the quality of team in the SEC is better than that of overall of the Pac-12. And I just see that with more quality teams, I think that there's a better possibility for more teams to make it. Because I look at teams that I think are better than kind of the lower bit, the team, not the five teams that I mentioned, but you look at Alabama, Kentucky, Florida, Mississippi State played like a tournament team last night, really showed some resolve and grit against a tough Missouri defense. Tennessee, senior laden, LSU's not playing too badly. Arkansas's currently 9-1, only loss was to Missouri. They've got some really good talent on that team. Got a freshman on their team leading them in scoring, playing really well. And then you look at even it also Missouri. Though I think all those teams I think have a really nice chance of making it. And then there's even some fringe teams that could cause some problems. Ole Miss has generated a lot of steals and a lot of turnovers on defense. Georgia currently sitting sneakily at 7-1, although all of those 7 wins were at home and non-conference wins. Their only conference game, they were not able to win that one. But I just like the SEC overall, and I think the only way that the Pac-12 could sneak in more teams in the SEC is if the SEC really cannibalizes itself, like we see sometimes in the Big Ten, where the Big Ten is going to send the most teams, but they may not have a one seed because nobody's going to run the table in the Big Ten, go undefeated.
Yeah, no, there's not going to be an undefeated team anywhere near the SEC. I also will buy this one. I'll buy this one big time. The teams I have right now, I was looking at Bracketology by Joe Luminardi. Here are the teams he has in the SEC that are going to be in the tournament in some capacity. Tennessee, Mizzou, Arkansas, Florida, LSU, Alabama. For the Pac-12, he has four teams. Oregon, Colorado, UCLA, USC. Stanford, Washington State, maybe they're on the fringe. I would watch for them, like you said. But like the fact that I think Tennessee, Mizzou, Arkansas, Florida, LSU, and Alabama, I still think, and like I said, I think Florida's a dark horse. I think they get better. This is the crazy part is Kentucky's not even in the race right now. If Kentucky starts to turn up, they're 2-0 in conference, like we said, right? There could be a little bit of a path here. That could throw some fire on anything. That could be another team that goes right in, that finds their way in, sneaks their way in. Possible that they don't, right? This is also a team that's really looked bad to start the year, but I think there's a lot more hope because I think the four best teams in the Pac-12 are kind of like, not say miles away, but way better than the two that are looking in compared to one team you're looking in and Kentucky that I never want to count out just yet. And like you said, Mississippi State is pulling it together. They're looking really good. Got to give them their props, right? There's a little more pair, like they're this a little tougher of a conference it looks like. But yeah, also the SEC is also just a total mess. It's really weird to try to figure them out. But no, I'm definitely buying that the SEC will have more teams in there. Our final statement, this is probably a fun one. Gonzaga will go into the NCAA March Madness tournament undefeated. Alex, final one, buying or selling?
I think this one may be the easiest buy that we could have. I see a couple of games still on the schedule for BYU, the West Coast Conference. Definitely not a no slouch. It's definitely really come up since Gonzaga began to get good over the last decade. But I look at really just a couple of key games. They've got one tomorrow on Thursday, January 7th versus BYU. That's kind of on a short turnaround, so it's a little bit of an interesting game. They were not prepping to play BYU as their game. Both of those teams had games canceled. They decided to play each other, and that now means that they have to play three games versus BYU. They will be hosting BYU twice, and then on February 27th, they will be going to BYU, and so that'll be a tough game. BYU is always a tough place to play. They're a pretty gritty team, sitting currently at 9-2. So it's a team that I really like. And then, of course, they will be playing at St. Mary's next week as well on the 16th of January. So I think those are really the biggest roadblocks. I really don't see another team necessarily in the West Coast Conference standing up to them. You could make the argument for San Francisco, but San Francisco has played very up and down. They're currently sitting at 7-5. So San Francisco, I look at their team and I see that they've got, you know, of course they've got the nice resume bullet point of the fact that they beat Virginia early in the season a couple of weeks ago, and I like that one. But they just recently were blown out by Gonzaga their last time out, 85-62. They will, I believe, get a chance to host the Zags later in the season. Or actually, no, it looks like that they're only going to get to play them. Let's see. Let me give. They will play them at Gonzaga on February 13th. So I just don't see them going to the kennel and being able to knock off a dominating Gonzaga team. This San Francisco team is a team, and again, it has the win against Virginia, 61-60, third game of the season, but they've also lost some interesting games as well, most notably to a Cal team that's not very good. They played Oregon fairly close, but they've just lost some very questionable games. I don't see them bringing it and being able to knock off just a torrid offense of a Gonzaga team at home.
I'm going to surprise you a little bit. I thought I was really close to being straight out by no problem. I'm going to sell, and for only one reason. It's not because of Gonzaga's talent. It's not because of who they play. It's because of this year. Only reason. This team obviously is way more talented than anybody else in the West Coast Conference. I think they've proved that so far through conference play. I'm not even going to put it up to the fact that they have to play BYU more or that they have to play the Dons. I am solely putting it on the fact that this is a weird year where nothing works out right, and something is bound to happen. I find it just really hard. And this is, I think, if there's any team that would go undefeated, it would be Gonzaga, right? I just don't trust. It feels like it's almost too good to be true that I feel something's slipping up. I feel it's almost too, you know, almost like we're kind of giving them the crown already. And even if they lose a game, this is where I also think this comes into play. If Gonzaga is to lose a game in conference, who cares? They have the resume to be number one in the tournament by far. If anything, the lowest they'll go is like number three in the top 25 if something were to happen. This is too good of a team that has proven it on multiple occasions. It's just tough for me to be like, yeah, this team's guaranteed undefeated. They have the best chance, but I cannot. It is too even for me risky to buy a team going undefeated. If there's any team to do it, it would be them. If you gave me this resume, gave me 2 years ago when we were not worried about a pandemic, you give me the exact same resume with the exact same wins, right, with the exact same rankings, I'll say, yeah, no problem. Because there's not the fear of being contact traced and having to miss a game or the other team having to postpone. Then you put a game together real quick and then you're not prepared and you lose it by a buzzer beater three, right? If all those things were not an issue, I think Gonzaga has no problem. Because it's 2021 and we're still ravaging from the effects of 2020, I see one loss before the tournament. But if it is a loss, it's one that it's like they just didn't play well. Something was off. A guy was contact traced. And the other team had the target on Gonzaga's back, and they just hit every shot. You know, it's one of those when you describe it, you're like, I can't believe it happened. Oh, my God, type of games. I don't think it's going to happen because they have a better team on their schedule that will throw them a wrench to the point where they're like, yeah, they should have prepared for them more. They don't have Iowa left. They don't have Kansas left, right? They've done their business there. It'd be like a team like BYU or San Francisco that just kind of has that moment, has that game of their season, the one game Gonzaga doesn't. And it's just because it's this year. That's the only sole reason. I'm very careful in saying this because I am very high on Gonzaga. I think Mark Few has built his best team to date. And his consistency in the tournament is something that we have to give credit for in that small of a school. But it's 2021, which is the encore so far of 2020. So I cannot guarantee. I don't want to guarantee anything with not like the fact that what is it? A lot of these games, I'm looking at them. Outside of their game against Portland, everything is to be determined time-wise. Usually you have like 2 or 3 weeks ahead of time, but we can't even do that, right? So if we can't predict Gonzaga will get to play Pacific on the 23rd, I don't want to guarantee Gonzaga winning every game left in their schedule.
And so now just to move it on, we got just a couple of games we wanted to just quickly go over here, not to keep you guys too long, just some games that you probably want to be watching this week first. So I guess we can start off with today. We're recording this on Wednesday, January 6th, because this will be out a little bit later. We won't talk about these games too much. We'll save the games that will be more in the future for some more. But we've got a pretty nice game in the SEC with Arkansas at number 9 Tennessee, Arkansas team just had their first loss to Missouri. Looked pretty good in all of their other games. They've got Moses Moody leading them and scoring nearly 17 points a game. Arkansas team, it looks like it's possible that they could maybe get some offense going. Tennessee has been a little shaky on offense, but looked really, really good against a very good defensive Missouri team their last time out. And so got that one. And then we've also got, let's see, it looks like Wichita State and Houston. Those are pretty much the consensus two best teams in the American Conference. Wichita State, a little bit flying under the radar this year, but I like them in this game as well against Houston. Then we've got a nice Big Ten showdown. It's number 16 Minnesota at number 10 Michigan. And then we also have Seton Hall at number 7 Creighton. And Jerry, any of those games you want to talk about specifically?
The Wichita State situation's been interesting. Obviously, Houston lost one of their games. I forget to who, but they were perfect beforehand. Wichita State, again, just really interesting because all the stuff that's been going around the program. This is like the worst year to have a coaching scandal. So the fact that the Shockers are still kind of doing anything what they were expected to do, impressive. The game I'll be definitely watching the most will be Minnesota-Michigan. I've been really high on Michigan. I'm really high on Dickerson. He's been balling. And Isaiah Livers. I'm really interested to see how, though, this is like we've said, like if there's going to be a sub-500 team that makes the tournament at all, it's going to be from the Big Ten, right? Even if we don't agree that they will, there will be one. And this is the reason why. It's a normal conference game, Minnesota-Michigan, 16-10. You don't see that often. And if you're a nerd, that Seton Hall Creighton game, good game to watch. Let's get into the Thursday games here. Two major Thursday games, no big Friday games, which is kind of fun. We talked to them about this one at length. BYU versus number one Gonzaga and number 12 Illinois at Northwestern, the battle for Illinois. I know that's not the official title. I don't know if there's a real rivalry name for it. We talked a bit about Gonzaga, and I said that if there's we talked about how they could just be undefeated. This will be their first test in that undefeated road past what they've done so far, really. Not much to say outside that Jalen Suggs made a beautiful pass in one of these games that got slow mode, and it looks so beautiful. Man, he's a player. And Illinois has looked real hot. Northwestern had a hot start in the Big Ten. They've cooled down a little bit. They're a team that I would like to see in the tournament, but if they start slipping up a little bit in the Big Ten, they're like right on the cusp, it looks like. Between those two games on this Thursday, the 7th, what are you thinking, Alex?
I'm saying that I think I'm going to be much more interested in the Illinois and Northwestern game. Gonzaga, again, we've already kind of talked about the game with BYU. Alex Barcelo for BYU is going to have to play like his best game of his entire career. He's currently leading the Cougs with 16 points a game. But BYU, I just don't think that they're quite sharp enough to beat a team that is as efficient as Gonzaga. They've got two really, really good big men in Drew Timmy and Corey Kispert. They've got Jalen Suggs kind of running, piloting the ship. And they've also got good guys coming off the bench, most notably Andrew Nimhard, former Florida Gator, who's really provided them some nice minutes off the bench. They're really good, really 1 through 8. That's about their rotation. They've got about an 8-man rotation, and all 8 of them are very, very good. So I think that it's going to be hard for BYU, especially on the little bit of the short notice, to go to the Kennel and knock off the Zags. But Illinois and Northwestern, it's going to be a fun one because Northwestern has played really, really well at home. They've even knocked off their only two losses so far, I believe, in conference were to Iowa at Iowa and then at Michigan, their last two games out, essentially. They did get blown out by Michigan. They were beaten by about 21 points. But at home, they've been a completely different team. They've knocked off, at the time, number 4 Michigan State at home. They've also beaten a formerly ranked Ohio State team as well. And because they've beaten these two quality teams already, I really like Northwestern in this game. Illinois has been a little bit up and down. They've looked really, really good in some games, and they've looked very, very beatable in others. And for that, that's why I like Northwestern at home in this game. If this was not a Northwestern home game, I think I favor Illinois by a lot more. But man, Northwestern at home has just been a different beast this year. And I really like the way that the Wildcats are playing, building off last season's little bit of momentum at the end of last season.
Yeah, no, this Northwestern team, they're scary. And this is, again, it's just the Big Ten. We could have like 14 episodes just talking about each Big Ten team and why there's a chance they could be like in the, almost except for like Penn State, Maryland, right? Like teams that could be in the tournament. It's a deep conference and they're showing it every week. Like we said earlier, no huge games this Friday, but Saturday, because there is no college football going on, basketball's got you covered. Some of them keep in mind: LSU at number 13, Mizzou; Ohio State at number 15, Rutgers; number 4, Texas at number 14, West Virginia; and number 19, Clemson at North Carolina. I want to see if I can catch all of these games, right? I think all of them have a lot of implications, right? LSU's in this really weird spot. They're starting to get real hot. Will Wade is a guy. I don't want to say good or bad about him because I don't love him. But Mizzou's kind of been up and down. They lose to Tennessee by 20. Don't look like a good team at all. Come against an undefeated Arkansas team. Take care of business. They play really well. Everybody is doing, play a great defensive game, really destroying the paint. Then go to Mississippi State, are leading at halftime, and then get on go to a 30-point swing and lose. This team's all over the place. It's very Missouri, right? In the Ohio State-Rutgers game. How do you count out Rutgers and how do you count out E.J. Liddell? Yeah, how do you count out Rutgers? Both of these teams have a lot of haymakers. It's going to be a haymaker matchup. Texas at West Virginia. That's going to be a game, right? There's so much ways we can get into that. I'll let you kind of take over on that because you are the secret resident Big 12 man. And number 19, Clemson at UNC. This is a huge game for North Carolina and also a big one for Clemson because Clemson's usually not at the top of the ACC basketball chart. So for them to take off a blue blood, if they do it convincingly, it's going to be a statement game because they've done a lot to convince me, right? But it's going to be that moment where if Clemson comes out and beats North Carolina by 10, 15 points, people are going to go, whoa. Your average college basketball fan is going to go, ooh, ah, like this is going to be something. So there's a lot at stake in these four games early in the year. And with the lack of games that we have just in general, right, this is not the normal season. Everything's kind of flowing different. All these games just mean that much more. I really try to watch all four of these. And this will be my first weekend. I really get to dive back into college basketball outside of doing my research for it. This is a good Saturday. What are you looking forward to, man? I got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, you just kind of start at the top. LSU and Mizzou. Mizzou, you're right. They've been a little bit inconsistent. They've looked really, really good in some games, and they have looked a little bit suspect on offense and others. One thing that I think is very encouraging by Missouri is the fact that Jeremiah Tillman is really starting to play some good basketball. If he can stay out of foul trouble and keep making a difference like he's been able to make in the last couple of games, I really like Missouri's chances. However, one thing that is a glaring issue for Missouri, they are last place in the SEC. They are the 25th worst team in the country out of over 300 teams in three-point field goal percentage. They are coming in shooting at just about 27%. On top of that, you've also got their free throw numbers have taken a little bit of a step back as well. They're shooting at 73% after being significantly better than that last year. Of course, they had nearly the record-breaking spree as far as free throws made in a row last year. Really made them look good. Missouri's a team offensively that cannot afford to leave points on the board at the free throw line, especially with how poorly they have shot so far. You want to think that they're going to be better than that, but looking at their roster, they're just not really they're just not really built for three-point shooting. I look at them a lot like Kentucky. Not that, we have as tightly touted as the recruits at Missouri that Kentucky has, but neither one of those teams is built around being able to shoot the ball. You're not going to have a lot of good shooting in that. And they're taking on, again, a really scrappy LSU team. LSU kind of a little middle of the pack, figuring themselves out very nicely. They've got some quality impact players, and they're being led right now by someone who really can fill it up, being Cameron Thomas. Talk about a guy, he's shooting 45% from the field and 90% from the charity stripe. That is definitely nothing to sneeze at right there. Also shooting 35% from three from the guard position. For Mizzou, it's going to be all about shutting him down. Speaking of teams, we talked about how Mizzou's taken a little bit of a step back in terms of shooting from the free throw line. Talk about a team that has been, nearly worst in the country. The eighth worst free throw shooting percentage in the country right now belongs to the number 15 Rutgers Scarlet Knights. They are currently shooting 58%. That is unacceptable. I mean, the free throw, people talk about it all the time, and I'm not going to, I'm not going to say that I'm as good of an athlete as anyone on Rutgers team, but the free throw is not that hard to make, right? You see people, kids can do it, old adults can do it. There's no reason for you to be struggling when you're not shooting that poorly from anywhere else on the floor. Like if you're shooting 20% from everywhere else on the floor and you're not shooting at free throw shooting and you're not shooting well from the stripe, maybe you're just not that good of a shooter, right? But you're looking at a team that's shooting 38% from three-point range and 47% from the field, and yet they are just mightily struggling to get anything going from the free throw line. Prime example was last night, 3 for 12 from three-point range, and from the free throw line, 6 for 17. That's not going to win Rutgers games. They also had a very poor showing against an Iowa team. An Iowa team that, by the way, only beat Rutgers by 2 points in that game. And in that game, we see Iowa, they go 18 for 23 from the line. Rutgers, 4 for 12. It has been abysmal. It is just an unacceptable showing for an entire college, high major college program like Rutgers, with the scoring that they have and how they've played up to this point in the season, to be shooting 58%. There's not even a team remotely as large as them ahead. The teams that are shooting worse than them from the stripe are Holy Cross, UNC Asheville, Maine, Mississippi Valley State, Army, New Mexico, and Coppin State. I mean, the closest team it looks like to them from a Power 5, it looks like it's Pittsburgh. It's 17th, and they're shooting at about 61%. That's terrible. You don't want to be in that kind of conversation. That is literally losing them games, especially in the case of Iowa. If they shoot anything better than 25%, they're tied in that game. It's ridiculous. And if they continue to shoot like that from the stripe, teams are just going to put in guys that they don't really need, and they're just going to foul the crap out of them. That's what I would do if I was Ohio State. I'd basically try and play them 4-on-4, and I just foul them like every chance I got. Every time they look like they're going to get a basket, I'm fouling them because there's no way they're making back-to-back free throws. It's just, I mean, statistically, that almost makes sense. Like, there's almost no way. They're shooting 1-for-2 every time from the line minimum, if not 0-for-2. So I look at Rutgers, and Rutgers is a team I'm very high on, but the way that they've played, especially from the stripe, I just think that that's unacceptable for a college team looking to do well in the best conference in college basketball. And then, is there anything else you want to add to that? I don't know how strongly you feel about free throws, but free throw, to me, that's the one thing that you can control no matter what. The free throw line at every venue and, at every place, especially in an empty venue, it's at the same spot. You're not guarded. You've got all the time in the world. Knock them down. Anyone can shoot better than 58% with a little bit of practice. There's no reason that Rutgers should not be able to maintain that.
Alex, are you asking me how I feel about free throws?
Yes, I am.
Did you really ask me that?
I did.
Did you really ask me how I feel about free throws?
Of course.
When I talk about free throw percentage more than anybody else here.
Right. Like, there's one thing. Because normally you shouldn't have to talk about it.
Of course
it
does matter.
You shouldn't have to talk about free throw. I mean, that should just be something. I mean, it takes minimal effort to shoot 70% from the line. Like, that's not a tall task. I mean, I would wager that I haven't seen you shoot a free throw, but I'm sure that as a former basketball player, you could probably go out there today and shoot 70% from the line with 10 shots, right? I know I could, for sure. And again, I'm by no means an athlete of any kind, but I can shoot free throws. That was basically all I could do in high. That was the only reason I was on the team, was to shoot the technical foul free throws. That was why I was there. So, I think that for the free throw, it's something that's very controllable. You're standing still. You get all the time in the world, and you're not guarded. That's my thought on Rutgers and something. So I've got beef with them currently. They are playing at home, though. And again, they almost knocked off an Iowa team at home just last week. So I like Rutgers, but I think that Ohio State, if they're able to put Rutgers on the line some, and unless Rutgers has a drastic improvement at the line overnight, I like Ohio State in that one. The game that I'm in, and I think that you're most interested in as well, is that Big 12 showdown, Texas versus West Virginia. Texas, of course, coming off the heels of a very dominating win against Kansas, and then they were able to take care of business earlier this week as well. I'm trying to think off the top of my head who they played earlier this week, but nonetheless, they were able to get the W, and that was against an Iowa State team that's currently in the bottom half of the Big 12. Texas playing really good basketball. West Virginia, though, last night fell behind. I was watching this game because it came on before the Michigan State game. West Virginia fell behind. They were way behind, trailing a very solid and sneaky Oklahoma State team with Cade Cunningham. They come all the way back in that one, and really on the help of a little bit of unlikely heroes in that one. You had some very nice bench play. Of course, people were wondering how they were going to respond, they being West Virginia, with the loss of Oscar Tshiebwe. He said he is not coming back this season and is, essentially he's not going to be returning to them this season. And they're a team that I just think is very, good overall. Derek Culver played really big in that game. That game was actually on Monday, which they won 87-84. You saw a big game from Culver, 22 points, 19 boards. That's exactly what they needed from him in Shibway's absence. You also saw Kedrian Johnson, who'd only played a handful of minutes so far this season. He comes off the bench, has 25 minutes, 9 points, 5 assists, and 3 boards for the product who last season played for Temple College. I got to watch him play in the JUCO ranks, as Temple is not, you know, Temple College is not 15 minutes from my house. Watched him score 40 plus points in back-to-back games. He's a guy who can really play and really showed some effort on defense. I like Texas in this game, but man, it is always a tall task, like you said, to go to West Virginia and knock off the Mountaineers at home.
Well, the Mountaineers are just fun, right? I love teams. See, what Bobby Huggins does is basically plays the Chicago high school basketball way, which is we're going to press you the whole game. We're going to be quick. We're going to be athletic. We're going to try to dunk on you as hard as we can, right? And we're going to play fast. That's fun. That's challenging. Of course, it's also taxing, right? And that's why sometimes you could see these team, like a team like West Virginia, also fall apart. But this is why I'm excited for this game. It's a team where there's an identity. And we complain a lot about, for football teams, right, this lack of identity. What are you? Well, you know every time when you play West Virginia what you have to game plan for. And there's a beauty in that, right? And Bobby Huggins, he says, listen, I like you. And he can be a little more selective in his recruiting because he could say, I want you because you're faster. You're gonna hustle more. And I know you'll fit with me real well. He makes the guys in the system look that much better. It's so much fun to watch a team with an identity go out and be successful in that identity, especially when it's the fast, aggressive, get in your shorts, be, you know, we're trying to steal every pass, we're jumping passing lanes, like quick, fun game. Like, it's just fun to watch West Virginia. So I'm really excited to see, because they're ranked, and rightfully so, 14, and they're going to go up against a Texas team that has proven their merit, right? And the Big 12, the sneaky good conference, very top heavy. Any chance to get to watch West Virginia, just do it. It's fun to watch. Like, that's, if anything, it's going to be great TV. And you can never pass that up. And Alex, I'll let you finish off with the last game that we already talked about a little bit. Go ahead, end our day.
Yeah, this last game, of course, Clemson versus North Carolina, it's going to have big, big implications, you know, going back to our little buy or sell. This is going to have big implications on whether a team like North Carolina is able to get into the postseason, get into the NCAA tournament, because again, so far, the resume, the way that they've played, I just frankly haven't been super impressed, and this is a big opportunity. They're at home versus, again, a really salty Clemson team. I need some guard play to step up. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know if it's Leaky Black, if it's one of the freshmen, you know, Love or RJ Davis. I don't know if it's Andrew Playtech. Somebody's got to step up and make some shots, because if this team continues to shoot at about 30%, and despite having a really big team, you know, continually not just out rebound on the offensive end and just dominate, I just don't see how they're going to keep turning the ball over 16 times a game without the shooting chops that they've not been able to show and knock off teams like Clemson. This is a big game for Roy Williams and the Tar Heels.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I have nothing else really to add on that. So we're going to call it a quits here on this basketball episode. Thank you again for listening to Walk in the Field. We're trying to get out as much to you as we can. We're going to figure out sooner or later a time where we'll be on the air at KCLU. We'll have those episodes still on Spotify too, because we're not going to forget about our Spotify group that we've culminated these last couple weeks. We thank you very much for listening to the episodes. And we hope that you are enjoying the college basketball season that's unfolding in front of us. We sleep in May, and right now we're not even close to March. Thank you for listening to Walk in the Field. Peace.